I just became so determined that I needed to experience whatever it is they were afraid of. You know, I was taking in drugs that were affecting my ability to function. And I ended up jumping a freight train. I just really needed to be connected with on a, you know, feelings level.
You're listening to Second Stories, created and produced by Second Story, with me, Abigail Brocker, as your host. Second Story is a nonprofit based in Northern Virginia, working to provide safe havens and opportunities to grow and thrive to youth in crisis and their families. We help at-risk and homeless youth step away from their first story, one often marked by abuse, hardship, and crisis, and write their own second story, full of hope and promise. Second Stories is the home for more stories like these from people in our community. Up until now, most of our stories have had a bookend. People have been honest about the long-term effects of trauma, for sure. But for the most part, when we end the recording, the crisis is long over. We all know, of course, that's not how life works. We don't all just have a first story and a second story. Sometimes we have a few first stories and second stories. Sometimes it feels like we've turned the page and then things just get worse all over again. Today, we're hearing from Bonnie, someone who has experienced challenges in her past but isn't immune to it now either. She's someone familiar with hardship. Something we've learned from each of these stories, though, is that these experiences do make us stronger. And in Bonnie's case, they help us when the next thing comes along. It wouldn't be right for us to present this season without sharing a story like Bonnie's. And she is the perfect person to speak to this. She has a quiet strength that was present throughout our entire conversation, and it is infectious. She's a testament to the fact that even when we're at our lowest, we still have plenty to share that will help someone else. Let me introduce you to Bonnie. Bonnie, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing well.
Good. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. I'm really excited to talk to you. I want to hear a little bit about your upbringing and growing up, but I think the really interesting thing for me that you told me that kind of set the tone for your family is that it was a military family, so you traveled around a lot, and that kind of set the tone for the dynamic at home, too. Can you maybe elaborate a little bit on that? Tell us a little bit about what that was like.
So we moved to various places every 2 to 4 years. My parents were very young when they first started out as parents, 18. So leaned on the military kind of perspective as far as parenting, you know, the structure and discipline and that sort of thing, as well as for me as a child growing up within those different school systems and communities, is that relationally I didn't develop friends for the long term. So that kind of affected my sense of belonging and that sort of thing.
Did that feel fun that you got to like travel around a lot? Did it feel like it bonded your family?
It wasn't something that I enjoyed. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, I hear oftentimes other people that have grown up in the military, they did enjoy that process. I didn't necessarily enjoy it, but it had a lot to do with my insecurities, mm-hmm. my sense of being an outsider all the time, not being a part of a group.
So how do you think those feelings affected you growing up?
It had a great impact on me because of the sense of not belonging.
Yeah,
trying to find that place that I fit, right? And then the struggles that we had at home didn't help. So
right. Yeah. So how did you try to find your place?
I actually distinctly remember in high school making a decision to go into the smoking lounge to learn how to smoke cigarettes because I couldn't fit into the smart group. At least I didn't feel like I could. And then as far as the athletic crew, I couldn't fit in there either. So the smoking lounge back in the day, that was, you know, pretty laid back. So I figured I made an intentional decision to join that environment and then slowly become a part of that group of people.
What was that group of people like? What does that mean?
Just easy, accepting, just safe. Yeah, it did feel very safe.
Interesting. Uh-huh. So were those good friends?
They became very much so. Yep. Yeah. Very much so. My parents weren't very happy about it.
So, okay, so home was like this very structured place compared to the people you were hanging out with at school. Sounds like they weren't so much. Do you think that's part of also why you felt like you had a place there, was it gave you something that you didn't have at home, something much more laid back?
Yeah, definitely much more laid back. And friends. Yeah. I mean, growing up, moving all the time, you know, we lived in one area for a good extended period of time once we hit Northern Virginia. So, you know, I was able to establish longer than a year, 2 years, 3 year move.
Right. So you settled in Virginia. How old were you when you settled here?
I guess it was like seventh grade. And then we went over into the Centerville area during my ninth and on.
Mm. Yeah, that's a hard age to have to make a change.
And I think my parents were struggling a little bit as well. So that dynamic, though I wasn't really completely conscious of it, there's just that sense that something, they're not happy.
Right, in their marriage.
Right. I didn't know that, but
right.
They were just not happy.
Right. Yeah. And that seems like kind of a military thing too, don't ask, don't tell. Like, we don't have to be as open about it.
Well, and they definitely believed in the keeping things, you know, on the down low, mm-hmm. as far as from the kids.
Right.
But, you know, kids can pick it up.
And you've said that there was a time that you, somewhere along the way, it felt like you started to rebel. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
I think it was around the same period of time when I decided to start going into the smoking lounge and started establishing friends within the area that we were living during those last 4 years in high school. And I think my parents were somewhat fearful of, based on their own personal experience coming up, you know, when they were in high school and choices maybe they made and how it impacted them in a negative way. That they needed to control where I was going, but it was more of a strong arm kind of control versus a personal, let's sit down and I think it was fear-based, and I kind of understand that now as a parent, but back then I did not understand it, and so I just started making decisions that made them very angry. I'd just go to a party, and at one point I remember them yelling for me to come back to the house as I was running down the street.
Oh, wow.
Because they had said, yeah, sure, you can go, and then they changed their mind. And I distinctly remember hearing them. And that period of time, that party weekend, I ended up jumping a freight train. It was just I just became so determined that I needed to experience with whatever it is they were afraid of, you know what I mean? It's just I just needed to go and do, and I did. So I got into trouble with the police and stuff like that, and that just didn't make it any better.
Right. That's so interesting that you say you felt like you needed to experience whatever it was they were afraid of. Do you think that was what prompted you? Like, what prompted you to need to do that?
I just needed to go and do. There was no, the rules were so strict as far as going over to friends' houses, how long I could stay there, all of that kind of control that they were trying to, you know, put around my brother and I, that I just it was, to me, unreasonable. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I just decided that I wasn't going to follow the rules, and whatever I could do, yeah, I did. That freight train experience didn't last very long. Within, I'd say, 15 to 20 minutes, the train stopped and police were right there. So yeah, I think the conductor saw us on the side. Then the whoever was on the train said, oh, they must have gotten on. And so we ended up at the police station in Fairfax not too long after that.
And I'm assuming it didn't just end after that. Like, was that something that almost encouraged you to keep
trying? I just kept going. Yeah.
Yeah. And that, what did that look like for you, hanging out with the wrong people?
Because I was continuing to press my parents in the direction they didn't want me to go. I think that's what ended up causing me to go to run away to Alternative House. Mm-hmm. Was being at a friend's house, and my parents didn't want me to be there. And I just was fearful about going home because of the restrictions and parameters they were going to put around me as a result. So I just made a decision that I didn't want to do this anymore.
So when you say, I didn't want to do this anymore, what didn't you want to do anymore?
The restrictions and the controls and the lack of connectedness that I was having with my parents, the lack of feeling understood. I literally felt at that time, if you read my journal, I felt as though I wasn't loved. I know that's not true. Right. That's not a truth. Right. But at that time, that was real for me.
Right.
And so therefore, I just made the decisions that I did.
Right. When I hear what you're saying, I think about parents who listen, they're like, I'm trying so hard. I'm parenting the best way I know how. And I think a lot of parents parent out of fear. You know, when you say that, I think that's so natural. What do you wish your parents would have known that you felt like they didn't know at the time that made you feel that way?
I just really needed to be connected with on a, you know, feelings level and what was going on for me personally, and that get that sense from them that they were really emotionally connected. Mm-hmm. I don't know that they had that within them at the time. Yeah. Now looking back in hindsight, recognizing they had their own issues going on in their own personal life between the two of them and individually, that they just but that could have made a big difference.
Yeah. That seems like a very American value to not talk about your emotions very much and pretend like everything's okay. Do you think that's true? Is that just me?
Yeah, having it together.
Yeah, right. Pretending you have it together.
Close the door. Mm-hmm. If there's going to be an argument so the neighbors can't hear.
Yeah.
Right.
Even in the home, like even in the with the people you're very closest to.
Right.
Yeah. And that made you feel like you weren't cared about, like that your feelings didn't matter, even though that probably wasn't true. It just was the way it felt.
Right. Very much so. It was about performance. You know, I wasn't measuring up.
And you felt like you needed that somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. People who just took me as I was.
Yeah. And that's what you found.
Yeah, very much so.
Awesome that you found people like that. Do you feel like there were times, though, that, I mean, you're obviously doing some dangerous things. Were there times that you ended up putting yourself in danger because you were searching for something outside your home that you should have been finding in your home?
You know, I was taking in drugs that were affecting my ability to function.
Right.
I think there was a few times where friends had to help me.
Yeah.
Because I was out of it. And then as far as physically in relations with men or boys or whatever, you know, just getting into that kind of stuff as well. So,
yeah. I guess it's what we like talk about and think about a lot of when you're not in your home and you're running away and you're trying to find something outside, you'll find stuff.
Right. And it's with absolute strangers that, right.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, when you say Alternative House, I know what you're talking about, but Alternative House is second story. I want to clarify that. For people listening, tell me about that. How did that change things? How did it affect you when you came to the shelter?
I think the first thing that I remember so distinctly was that pulling up to the door and being in the threshold of the doorway and my mom standing there with a police officer and
at the shelter,
at the building, right? The house. It was a house.
Yeah.
think it was a split level or, but her just turning to the police officer saying, I don't want her to go in there. And the police officer looking at her and saying, she is safe here. She doesn't have to come out. I can't force her out. And my mom looking at me and saying, I want you to come home right now. And I made a decision, no, that I was going to stay there because I was told that I had 2 weeks. I could have at least 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And so I made that decision to stay there. And that was big.
Yeah.
That was big for me to be able to stay there. And then the whole counseling process.
Yeah, did you do the family counseling?
Yeah.
And was that helpful?
It was helpful in only, it was the beginning stage of recognizing that I had a voice.
Yeah.
So, with my parents.
Yeah.
Not that I knew at all really what I wanted. I wasn't emotionally mature enough to really recognize what it was I was feeling. I distinctly remember saying, I just want freedom. I just want to be free. Like, you know, I recognize it now, but back then it was so immature at the age of, 17, almost 18. And my parents' response was, okay, fine. You know, what do you want, a bus ticket? And it really wasn't what I was looking for, was it?
Right.
It was, I wanted so much more than freedom.
Right.
I really wanted a connectedness with my parents, but...
Yeah. So what happened then? What happened after that?
They said, okay, fine, we'll take you home. You can pack your bags and we can take you to the bus station, you know, to wherever you want to go. And between that point of packing my stuff and going to the bus station, somewhere in that transaction, I said I didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
I started to become fearful. And they decided to, okay, we'll sit down, we'll set some rules. The only way you're going to be able to stay here is if you abide by them. And so we went through that process.
So it sounds like having something like Second Story, having counselors, whatever, was helpful as like a first step. But there's still a lot of work that needed to be done after that.
Right.
When your parents made those rules for you, how did that go? Okay, did you stay at home and adhere to the rules, or was it like, that's not what I wanted, you know, this doesn't help me at all?
No. So my mother started counseling much right in that same window. I actually think she connected with a counselor at Alternative House.
Cool.
And they had made that decision during the last family, something had conversation had happened, and that counselor, my mother just shared with me that that counselor had actually said to her that Bonnie opened the door and went through it, and you're following her out, which I thought was kind of, and that was kind of like my mother and I kind of did this together.
Yeah.
We both made changes in our lives that really impacted my father in a negative way. I mean, he didn't want this kind of chaos going on, and but, you know, it was just part of the counseling and discovery. My mother had a process of learning about herself. And then my parents separated not long after. And when they separated, I think I ended up leaving and going down to Tennessee for a while and worked at Pizza Hut and stuff like that. And that whole time, I think, you know, I did like counseling with maybe church group, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And you're still self-reflective now. You seem really aware of what you were struggling with then. What helped you transition to understanding these issues? You know, what happened between then and now that has made you be able to understand what was wrong and why you were reacting this way?
I think it goes, there's two things that are foundational, and that was whether it's counseling through friends, through church groups, through counseling centers, because I have gone to counselors and sat and had some sessions over the years. It's just a hunger to not be in this emotional turmoil and to be stable. I remember my first child being born, and within a few months, maybe six, of my needing to go to counseling.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. How has your experience with your parents affected your parenting?
Most important with all three of them is just connecting with them, talking with them, always having the doors always open, no matter what. It doesn't matter what you do, where you're going, what you've said to me last, what you feel like saying to me now. It is just raw, open. As we become adults, you know, my mother's door is always open.
Yeah. So your relationship with your mom is really different now. You really walked through this together. What helped that? What changed that for you guys?
I think in her, the process during those early years where she started going to counseling, she started recognizing the pain that she was going through. I distinctly remember a time when she wanted to sit down and have a conversation and, you know, kind of hear, like, let me just kind of spill stuff out. And though it was painful for her to hear some of the stuff that I did as a result of my needing to rebel or push away on her, and it affected her emotionally, it felt so good to be able to just kind of be real.
Right.
And that was the beginning of us just being available to each other.
Yeah. We talk so much about safety, and you know, I think the safety that you think of right away is physical safety, and your parents provided a physically safe home for you, you know, provided for you, whatever, but it sounds like there was this different kind of safety that they weren't quite able to provide, and it was the safety to express yourself, to feel like your emotions were valid.
Right.
Yeah, and that's an important kind of safety too, and it's, I think we don't value it as much, but that's what you needed, you know, through counseling, through the shelter, was this other kind of safety, and then like your relationship transformed to now you feel safe.
You get to this place of comfort. You're okay with who you are and where you're at. And it's a good place.
Yeah. Yeah. More acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I cannot imagine my life without counseling, fellowship, being able to, because right now I'm very much involved in support groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And helping others within certain types of support groups, as far as helping leading classes and stuff. I can't imagine it.
Yeah. Things have been hard lately for you. Like, it's not like all of a sudden things have gotten easier and like things are great now. Can you talk about your husband a little bit?
Yeah. So we have gone through since about, well, the end of 2012 to now, I would say four different catastrophic kind of like family things, where his mother passed away and he found her, and that was just horrific for him. She'd lived next door for 17 plus years, so it was hard. I don't think he realized. And then right after that, I was diagnosed with cancer. And then within a year, one of my daughters was diagnosed with schizophrenia. That whole journey was, you know, really pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps, trying to figure out how to help her so that she's not out on the street and she's getting the help she needs. And in that time frame, I think my husband was sliding into some sort of depression. He just hit a wall in January that you could see the anxiety, you could see the lack of sleep. I could see where he wasn't making sense as far as, you know, this strong man that kind of had his sense of purpose and direction. He was kind of losing that, and it wasn't making any sense to me. And then in February, it was February 20th, he was supposed to go, he and I, to a doctor appointment, and for possible depression. And he took his life that morning. So it was the wee early hours. He got up, he got his clothes on, and the last words that we exchanged was that I have the socks in the washer, I'll put them in the dryer, and he says, it's all right, Bonnie, don't worry about it. And then he just, within 15 minutes or less, I'm walking down the hallway and I can hear the gunshot. And it was, I think, planned, because it was, he went outside, he was in the garden, you know, everything's, it just seemed planned. And so we've been working through that. It's going to be a long time working through that, but we continue to go to counseling.
You know, I feel like when I hear from you, it's like, I can't imagine that. No one can imagine what that must feel like, but you sound like you have the tools. You know, no one is prepared to deal with something like that. And we can't on our own. I think that's what's inspiring to me is we can't on our own, but you seem really aware of that. I'm really inspired that the things you experienced when you were young are still so relevant to you today. You know, it really equipped you, I feel like, to be able to deal with something that's just unimaginably hard.
There's no way you can go through that stuff without other people who have walked that walk. This is just an emotional journey.
Yeah, how are you now? It's been...
He's still very much a part of my everyday.
Can you tell us about him?
Very much a quiet, in control. He was auto mechanic for our whole married life, supported the family to the point where I could stay home and be, you know, involved in the kids, and that was important. And he loved the Lord, and reading his Bible, and he took care of it. There was no need for repair people in our house because he fixed it all. Yeah, he loved his girls and he was a good man.
Yeah. And now, I mean, you have some hindsight. I know it's still really fresh, but when you think about someone else going through something like that, what do you think in this process has been really transformative for you? What do you feel like have been the things that have been most helpful as you grieve and as you work through that kind of loss? What's made a difference for you?
My girls, family, my Lord. And that determination to make something good, you know, continue to strive forward. But there's no way without friends, family.
Are you in remission?
I am. I have 5 years, yeah.
So little by little, these things are, you're moving, one day at a time. You're moving through some of these really hard things. It's crazy because I just feel like everything has been slapped at you. You know, you have these issues growing up, suicide, mental health, illness. Like, it's like a lot of people deal with one of those things in a life. Not even everyone, but people who deal with hard things deal with one of those things in a lifetime, and it can really break them. But you've dealt with them all, and I feel like you have this quiet strength, and you're very articulate about the ways that you've found help through these things, which I feel like is so needed for people who are walking a similar path as you. I mean, I feel like is there anything else that when you're sitting in this or you're looking back that you feel like you want to be able to share for other people who might be experiencing something similar to what you're experiencing?
I just can't say it enough, really, is to be able to open up and communicate and share.
Yeah. What a theme throughout your life. That is really interesting. In some ways, it seems like it was a gift that you had these experiences when you were young because they taught you at a really early age how important that is. And then when all of these things have happened in your adulthood, you were prepared. Do you feel like that's true?
It definitely laid a groundwork. Suicide right now seems to be in the increase. Yeah. And to me, it is all up inside the head, and it's not being able to work through, you know, those things that are going on up in there.
Right. And seeking help for that.
Yeah, it's so about connectedness. It's so about availability.
Thanks for talking to us, but also thanks for doing the things that you do to help people in tough places. I feel like that quiet strength that I mentioned, I really feel like that's a gift. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Second Stories. If you enjoyed this episode, we would be so thankful if you rated our podcast and left us a review. Be sure to also hit subscribe so you don't miss our next episode. Second Stories is created and produced by Second Story with production support from Franklin Vaughn. Second Story is a nonprofit based in Northern Virginia that works to provide safe havens and opportunities to grow and thrive to youth in crisis and their families. Learn more about what Second Story does and how you can support us at second-story.org. That's second-story.org. We hope you'll join us next time.